The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Well, hey, folks, I don't think I hear Brett on the line. This is actually Sam Maul. Welcome to Breaking Banks. This is the first global fintech podcast and radio show. Like I said, this isn't Brett. This is Sam. I'm actually stuck in Chicago, of all places. I was at the BAI Beacon Conference speaking, and there's a hurricane that decided to trash my house in Florida. So I'm going to spend the next 2 days in Chicago, and it's because God evidently is incredibly mad at me. I'm in a hotel room sitting with Ron Shevlin and J.P. Nichols. So all is not right.
You're not living a good life, Sam.
I am not living life right for some reason. Good news is we've actually launched our FinTech 5 podcast. This is new for me. I've been working with the producers of Breaking Banks, Rachel Morrissey and crew, and Brett to put together a FinTech podcast that's really focused on the ADHD crowd, like myself. A 5-minute series, quick hitting. It's available on iTunes. I'll tweet it out like crazy throughout this podcast. As I can also. On today's show, we're really excited. We're going to talk about the mission to expand diversity in tech, the movement in basically the payment space, and looking at the gender diversity issue. We have an incredible number of guests that are lined up for the show. Hopefully, Brett will be able to dial in also. He's God only knows where Brett is. But first, we want to do a couple of conference announcements. And the first is the Media Partner Conference. The FinDevor Silicon Valley is coming October 18th and 19th. It will showcase the latest tools, platforms, and case studies for the techies in fintech. That was cute writing, Rachel. I like that. The techies in fintech. I guess that's me. You can register now with the code BBBanksDevR20, and you'll get a 20% discount. And if you're interested in blockchain, and Lord knows who isn't, don't forget to go to the MIT.edu blockchain site and submit your ideas about how blockchain can be legally defined. Because we all know we have a million definitions for blockchain. This will be part of a hearing in Washington, D.C. next week on October 12th and 13th. Tweet us at BreakingBanks1 with any questions, insights, and snarkity comments. Or even just love. And like I said, I've got Ron and JP sitting behind me, so they both have their laptops and phones up in their hands, and they're live tweeting like crazy. You can also tweet Brett and I. You can tweet Brett at Brett King and at Sam Maul.
And I managed to get on.
Well, how was that, Brett?
Yeah, how'd you like my... it was good. It was good. I managed to get on, but you're doing fine, dude.
That's called a mad scramble with a nice long pause.
I'm in Capri in Italy, and we just had this massive storm here. Of course, nothing like what we're going to see in Florida over the next few days. It cut off. The internet's been playing up as a result. What about that hurricane bearing down on Florida? I hope if anyone's listening to this in Florida, why are you listening to this?
My wife and kids are loving life right now because they're stuck in the path. They live in Jacksonville, and I'm in Chicago. So while they're going to ride out the hurricane, I'm going to go watch the Magnificent Seven what I do.
There you go. That's what you do. So what's up in news this week? Of course, we've got Adam Bank has opened its doors to the UK customers. So that's getting a lot of traction today. And they're using face and voice biometrics as part of the account opening process. So that's getting a lot of attention. I think we're going to see a lot more of that. You know, we've been talking about identity on the blockchain and things like that, but we're going to see a lot more of these alternative identity approaches emerge within the fintech and you know, challenger banks particularly. What else did you see in the news this week that caught your eye, Sam?
Well, I'll tell you one that just came out, and it's kind of flying across Twitter. It's Snapchat. There's rumors that they're going to go for an IPO targeted for next March, valued at $25 billion. Can you believe that, Brett?
That's not a bad exit, you know, for the investors, is it, $25 billion?
Well, not that, and you're also marrying a supermodel for one of the founders, so that's pretty good, I believe, Miranda Carr. Yeah,
well, you know, she's Aussie.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I mean,
all those good-looking people from Australia.
And Brett. That's true.
And me.
And Brett with his rhinestoned jacket that's bedazzled, which I'm very proud of.
There you go. So what's Ron and JP up to?
Ron is madly typing on the world's littlest laptop. I'm going to take a picture of that. That is the cutest thing I've ever seen. It's beautiful, and JP is busy taking a bunch of pictures of my hotel room. Brett, you would be very proud of me. So I spoke at BAI Beacon today. Matteo Rizzi, who's a good friend of us in the show, had asked me to come and speak
from Fintech Stage.
You've got it. I love Matteo, and you know the kind
he's
of
he's not there in the hotel room with you, is he?
Oh my God, if he is, we got problems. that would be fantastic. I was on stage and I actually talked about lessons for banking from the porn industry, and to make God happy, I'm now in a hotel room with Ron and JP. It's just wrong.
All right. Well, I'm not even going to get into that at all. I'm not going to touch that.
Well, Rachel, I don't know. Do we have Ian Carr on the call? I hope so. Ian, are you there?
Yep, I'm right here. That would be wonderful. How's it
going,
guys?
Hey, Ian.
How's it going?
Good. Congratulations on your new role and moving out to SoCal.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm excited. And the Snapchat IPO is definitely, Snapchat's located in Venice, so I'll definitely be, you know, hopefully keeping an eye out for something like that. I'm excited for the spectacles, too. I don't know if you guys have taken a look at those yet.
I saw them, and, I saw... our old mate Robert Scoble was planning on doing another shower shot with the new glasses on.
Oh, that's pretty funny. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some interesting commerce potential there too. I mean, theoretically, you can do a lot when you have cameras attached to your face. I know Google Glass didn't really work out, but these spectacles look a little.
Did you see? But you saw Oculus Rift announced their sort of next generation stuff today, and in that they've got augmented reality. Tracking, so if you've got other people in the room with you, it can track their identity and sort of incorporate them in the mixed reality scene. So we're going to start to see more and more of this sort of mixed reality play with, you know, using glasses and you know, superimposing data and also use of cameras is going to be very important for AR.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I definitely, and I'm sure you saw a couple, maybe months ago now, Alibaba and Alipay have been working on a VR wallet. I think that e-commerce in virtual and augmented reality is going to be a big deal, but the payment process is still, you know, kind of murky, and I think fixing that is a really interesting opportunity for a lot of payment companies.
So what news did you have for us, Ian? On millennials going after a new card?
Yeah, so the Chase Sapphire Reserve card, I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's a pretty sweet deal. It launched in late August, and since then it's been catching on like wildfire. Essentially, it's a card that has, if you spend $4,000 in the first 3 months, you get 100,000 points. Which is actually really, you know, pretty profound. That's one of the highest perks in terms of points that out of any card. And really, there are a lot of great advantages. For instance, they pay the card is really for if you're a traveler and you like to, you know, travel and fly a lot. The miles are tremendous. And for instance, you get interesting perks like $100 credit towards the application for the TSA Global Entry or pre-check. You get access to lounge access to airports, a $300 annual travel credit. Here's the kicker, though. There's a $450 annual fee, plus a $75 a year fee on top of that for any additional cardholders. So that's significantly high. And the bet is that millennials are willing to pay this high fee in order to, you know, to amplify their experiences. At J.P. Morgan, the head of consumer banking there, Gordon Smith, presented at a Barclays FinTech conference earlier this year, saying that millennials spend more of their wallet on experiences than any other previous generation. And experiences are things like travel, entertainment, and dining. So they're trying to really capitalize on that. And I mean, it seems like it's working so far. Bloomberg reported that the card was so popular that they ran out of the metallic cards that they initially produced, and they're sending plastic replacement ones instead until they can start shipping out more of the metallic ones. And there have been, you know, it's kind of reached like a gadget status where there have been unboxing videos on YouTube, Reddit posts with thousands of comments talking about it. The only thing I think is that whether it's right for every millennial. I think that if you have a steady income and you like to travel, but that's not it's a great card. But you know, that's not really the entire millennial demographic. I know that, you know,
but unemployment, I think is a good. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good lesson for you know, product designers, or more so experienced designers within banks. They need to start thinking about the fact that sort of the rewards and context is increasingly being experiential. So it's not so much that this is reward points; it's rewards that enable them to travel. So that's right. That's really what's the kicker here, is they want to be able to have that freedom, to have those experiences, and if a card enables that. But it's not reward. They're going after rewards. It's they're going after experiences. Would you say that's right. An accurate assessment?
Yeah, I 100% agree. It's definitely not a reward, but I think millennials are definitely looking to travel, and they, you know, focus on experiences, things like dining and eating out and things like that. And any card that makes that process easier and makes it more rewarding for them. I mean, the people are going to do these kind of activities regardless, but if a card gives you extra points on top of that, that never hurts.
You know, it's kind of funny though, guys. You remember a couple years ago, the absolute grief the Kardashian card got for its fee structure that it set up? It kind of tells you how far we've moved along.
Yeah, but you know, I don't know if they had a lot of value. You know,
well, it was a prepaid card. It had no value. It was a prepaid card with they just front loaded the fee structure, if I remember, when they first launched it. But it's just funny how we've moved along.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it seems like the card is doing really well. I know personally, a bunch of my friends are really interested in it, and you know, even on my own, I've definitely thought about getting it. And yeah, I mean, it seems like it's definitely going to be exciting to see how it's definitely focused towards a more of a it seems like it's aiming at a Amex luxury card, and it's but a younger demographic. And I think one interesting trend that I've been seeing recently, just anecdotally, is that you know, Amex used to have this really storied and, you know, premium brand status, and I think that's kind of gone by the wayside over the past decade or so. You know, the other night I was at a dinner and everyone had a Chase Sapphire card, and I think one person had an Amex, and I was pretty surprised, because probably in the early 2000s or 90s probably wouldn't have been the case. I think the Amex card used to be a lot cooler, and that the brand is losing a lot of coolness, and I think that a lot of other companies are kind of seeing that aspect and seeing as a potential growth opportunity too.
Yeah, I think, Ian, I think one of the biggest pieces of news in fintech right now is you actually moving out to the West Coast. What's up with that?
Well, I mean, Acorns is a really interesting company. I've been using the product for a year and a half, actually. And, you know, product management is something pretty new, definitely different from journalism. So I'm pretty excited about that. And I'm excited to, you know, I think the mission of the company is really interesting, of helping young people understand finance and and kind of teaching them that saving at an early age is really important. And the way that they go about doing it, which is, you know, rounding up your expenses. So let's say you spend $9.50 on a coffee. They take the extra 50 cents and move it to a savings account that they invest in ETFs for you. And I think that's a really interesting way to kind of tackle the savings problem. And even personally, it's been a really great help for me. So I'm definitely excited to kind of capitalize on that and kind of, you know, help add new aspects and, you know, things that I experience as a young person and you know, someone who's curious about finance and technology and the intersection of the two.
Well, you know, SoCal's a great place to do it. You know, if that's, of course, if the earthquake doesn't happen. But
well, I'll take my chances on that. You know, I think I'm definitely excited for the weather. I'm excited to skip. It's already getting cold in New York, and I'm not. Yeah, you know, I don't know how it is in Chicago, Brett. I'm sure in Italy it's probably gorgeous. So I'm not too. I'm pretty jealous, but I think in the weather is definitely an added benefit for sure.
All right. Well, Ian, thanks for joining us again. And I'm sure. And even though you're moving to Acons, I'm sure you're going to continue to help us on breaking banks from time to time.
Absolutely, would love to.
Great. Well, thanks very much, Ian, and have safe travel.
Thank you.
Okay, so now, Sam, we've got a few guests to introduce. So first up is sort of leading the charge for us today is one of the founders and the president of Anthemis, Amy Naukas. Amy, I should be able to pronounce this being a Melbourne boy growing up in with all my Greek friends, but I'm just having a moment. We also have joining us Tanya Dasreit from Artivest.
Hello.
Tanya.
It's nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
No problem. So Tanya began her career in investing as a fixed income trader at Goldman Sachs and moved to Goldman Sachs Asset Management. And what are you doing right now, Tanya?
Sure. I'm the COO of Artivest, and Artivest is a tech-driven investment platform, and we connect leading private equity and hedge funds to financial advisors and their clients.
Great. Fantastic. And we have Julie Chakraverty. Is that how I say it, Julie?
That was pretty good. Pretty good.
Oh, pretty good. I have this challenge every week. I used to be able to get names, but and you're at Aberdeen Asset Management, and you're a non-executive director there.
We're one of the largest independent asset managers in Europe. We run around $400 billion across the full spectrum of assets.
Fantastic, and we have Rian Horgan, CEO of Kindred.
Hi, Brett. How are you?
Good. Welcome.
Thank you.
And you lead development of the offline advice-driven and outcomes-oriented marketing campaigns,
So I was at JP Morgan for 17 years, and I'm now the founder of Kindred. We're building financial solutions for families during retirement, helping them simplify and collaborate around decision-making around health and wealth decisions.
Great. And we have our old pal Gayla Boscovich also joining us back on the show.
Hi,
Gayla.
Hi, how you doing?
And you are, of course, about to launch your own podcast with our team. You can sort of talk about that a little bit, can you?
Well, I suppose I can. We'll be launching FemTech. We'll have a FemTech podcast coming up. We're still in the middle of doing interviews with a bunch of very interesting women, and we'll be talking mostly just about tech. But that'll be coming up, and I'm sure we'll have a few more announcements in the coming weeks.
Absolutely. So, Amy, have you sorted out your microphone issues?
I don't know, Brett. How's that?
That's working. Yeah. Great. So, Amy, you sort of helped us put together this group of compelling people. So, the theme of the show today was talking about diversity in fintech. But why did you choose this group of people to come on the show with us?
Yeah, well, look, so I've spent a good 25 years in traditional financial services before moving over and starting Anthemis. And I have to say that from both an investor's perspective as well as an advisor's perspective, and then from someone who's worked the street for several decades, I actually think that there probably are no two worse industries when it comes to gender equality than financial services and tech. And so, look, I'm not going to cure cancer. I'm not a scientist. This is what I do. I have three young children, and I feel like if I've got any legacy or anything to prove, it's going to be to make it better in the fintech space. We're starting an industry. We're growing our own companies from the bottom up. There's no reason why we can't do a better job in fintech than anybody's ever done in financial services and technology. So we're taking it very seriously, and we're really excited about partnering with other women and other men and other institutions that have a similar goal.
Now, do you think, Amy, that the tendency will be for us to have higher representation of, you know, strong female leadership and strong female talent in fintech than we see in traditional financial services, which tends to be, you know, this issue of diversity tends to be an ongoing problem in the financial services space?
Yeah, look, I think one of the challenges that most female professionals in a financial services shop have is that there have been, over the past 20 years, small incremental moments of change or moments of opportunity where things have gotten better, but it has not happened fast enough. And it's absolutely ridiculous that we can't figure out how to make it happen better. So I think, given the majority of women leave financial services roles mid-career, in some cases around, you know, around or before they've had their families, there's got to be a way to attract some of those women to other fintech startups or other ventures that give them an opportunity to have a much different experience than what they have in the large financial institutions. And I think there's more, you know, I think that it's easy to look at a very unnuanced version of why women leave Wall Street and to sort of come up with various different facts and figures about why we think they're leaving. But the reality is they're not leaving and disappearing and going to eat bonbons. They're leaving because it's not tenable to work in that environment and balance having a family and, quite frankly, be paid a market rate for what you do with the skills that you're bringing to the table. And until financial services firms fundamentally change, it's not going to change in any way, shape, or form for women. So I think, you know, looking at ways we start companies, and it has to start from the senior leadership team. I mean, you talk about sort of why it's changing, why it's not changing. You know, we have an opportunity as investors to look for more diverse founding teams, and that diversity is going to create undoubtedly more diverse companies. And then the culture will be driven in large part by that founder and that founding team, and things will start to change.
So let me then address this to Tanya and Julie and Rian. Am I pronouncing that correct, Rian?
Yep, it's Rian.
Rian. Okay, so for the three of you, and maybe we go one by one, do you feel that being a founder, you know, gives you more flexibility? So Tanya, is that part of the drive behind being, you know, part of the founding team of a startup?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's very, very critical. And I would agree with Amy. It's very much up to that founding team to set the right type of culture. And I think when we think about diversity, it's very much about creating that organizational culture where women and minorities can thrive. And ultimately, being part of that early team is what can help companies succeed more than ever. Most organizations will say, ultimately, what's the key to your success? It's the team. It's the people that matter the most. How does that team work together? How does that team respond to change? How does that team build something that's greater than what each individual could do if they were just making something on their own? So I think that founding team really sets the tone, and they help prepare and create the right type of culture to make sure that there is diversity in the organization so that when you have different opinions and different perspectives, you are actually able to innovate in a really meaningful way.
And Julie Rian, let me sort of throw this at you then. Do you find that the cultural aspects of being in a startup make it a more positive working environment?
So it's Julie here. I absolutely think that startup, and as we just heard, it's up to the founder to set the tone. So it's interesting. I have a perspective as actually the lead director at Aberdeen, you know, this huge, big asset management firm. All of the big firms, really, as Amy said, will say, You know, it's the culture. We can't change it. You know, there aren't enough women in the pipeline. There's a whole series of excuses that every single big company makes. And when you're a founder of a startup, and I've created a startup called Rungway, which is actually all about people giving and getting help in the workplace in an innovative way, there are no excuses. And so because I talk passionately about diversity, I made my two mobile engineers be female, and they are fantastic. So a founder of a startup, I think, has no place to hide. There are no excuses. They have to role model the behaviors that they want to see. They need to empower their people, or you're simply not going to attract amazing engineers and designers. So I think being a founder is a really special responsibility to be a different kind of role model.
If I can maybe just pick up on what Julie said, I think the other opportunity as a founder is really defining a mission that has a kind of a personal connection to maybe some of your life experiences. And I think each of us grow up with different life experiences, and that kind of shapes where we want to spend our time. Similar to Amy, I was in financial services, traditional financial services, for about 17 years. And I had a moment when I thought about, you know, I have two young kids, a two-year-old and a four-year-old. And I thought to myself, the way my children are going to manage money is absolutely different the way I manage my money. And it's not about stocks versus bonds. It's where they go for advice, what the tools are that they use. And I wanted to be part of something where, you know, I could learn the new technology that, frankly, my kids already are better at than me. But as I looked at this, at the fintech world, what I saw was that, frankly, the solutions that are being created for consumers today are very millennial-centric. And I think when you bring different people to the table, what you start to see is actually solutions that can be built for a much more diverse population. So I think one thing is, well, what is your team look like? I think the other question is, who are you serving? And if you build a diverse team, you actually can build a service opportunity for a much more diverse community.
Where is Kindred based, Rian?
Kindred, we're based here in New York City.
Good, good, good.
Yes, I'm curious. Yeah, I was curious, Amy, if I looked at your bio right, you actually worked out of London for a while with Barclays.
Yes, that's right.
And Julie, you're obviously, you know, based out of the UK. Do you, without laughing at this question, do you think there's any cultural differences in approach to the diversity side from being in London and Europe as opposed to everyone else in New York?
I think the
you grew up through
J.P. Morgan. I did my training, you know, fully on Wall Street, and then I worked for UBS, and I was probably spent a week, a month, actually, in New York. And I really think that the problems are very similar. I mean, there are huge costs to the economy. So just a UK statistic for you, you know, PwC have worked out that by women being underrepresented in the workplace is costing the UK £170 billion or 9% of GDP. So it's a huge problem on both sides of the Atlantic for sure.
Yeah, I would agree, Julie. I think that there is one interesting difference between Europe and the U.S. right now, and I think I know Brett, you and I've had this chat before, but in Europe there have been a requirement of quotas and various other initiatives that have been put forth to force the diversity issue, and I've always struggled with the issue of quotas because for me, there are lots of reasons why quotas are not helpful, and there are lots of reasons why people who are part of a community serviced by quotas don't feel that they're helpful. However, the reality is, if you look at the 30% initiative in the UK particularly, they have done a phenomenal job of making those boards more diverse than anybody in the US has done. And I think there's something to be said that it's not moving fast enough. To Julie's point, there are too many excuses to, you know, it's, where do I find these women? They don't exist. There's nobody in the pipeline. Trust us. There are lots of us in the pipeline, and there are lots of opportunities to find great women to hold roles and positions of power in boards and in the C-suite, and they're just not looking hard enough. It's too difficult. And so in some cases, making a play for forced quotas or forced benchmarks and just things that we can hold ourselves to. I mean, I think it is about putting your money where your mouth is. Right now, only 9% of any of the venture capital money that's going to high-tech growth companies are going to female-founded companies. That's a really low number. But when you look at financial services, it's even lower. It's 2%, right? So at Anthemis, we're doing an okay job.
So it's still better.
not good enough. It's not good enough. It's, you know, I mean, we have right now 30% of our portfolio companies have female representation in their C-suites, but only 3% of our companies are female founded, and that's just not good enough. And so we're going to
wasn't there a VC that started recently that had the objective to fund female started companies? Did I see that?
There's a whole host of things, including a activist hedge fund that launched earlier this year that was in the New York Times. But there's a wonderful woman out of Los Angeles, Arlen Hamilton, who's working very hard to help funnel funds to underserved communities and underserved minorities as well. So yeah, there's lots of great stuff going on.
So excellent. I think there's a good place to actually pause, folks, because we have to go to a short break. We want to give a big shout out to our sponsor, Temenos. They've been wonderful to work with. Check them out at temenos.com, and we'll be right back with more Breaking Banks.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Hey guys, it's Brett King from Breaking Banks. If you've ever listened to my podcast and enjoyed it, you'll know I focus a lot on the future. When you look at artificial intelligence, robotics, self-driving cars, smart infrastructure, smart cities, health tech, gene editing, computers everywhere that are smart, this is going to have major impact in the way we live our life and the way society interacts. That's the subject of my new book, Augmented, Life in the Smart Lane, which comes out in the first week of May. Ramez Naam, the Philip K. Dick Award-winning author of Nexus, said, "You need to read this awesome roadmap of the future that Brett King has created." Please go and check out Augmented, Life in the Smart Lane, available on Amazon for order today.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag BreakingBanks. Now, back to the program.
Hey guys, you are back on Breaking Banks, and hosting the show today is myself, Brett King, and my co-host, my very capable co-host, Sam Moore, who's also the host of a new podcast, which has kicked off this week, called FinTech 5. So check it out. But we do have some little bit of indulgent news, if you will forgive me the indulgence. September, do you guys know what happened in September, Amy? What was, Gala, you probably know. Do you know why September's important for Breaking Banks?
Because we're Breaking Brain.
because we hit number one. We hit number one on Voice America Business as the top business show on World Talk Radio. So that was huge for us. We had an increase in our audience in September for some reason of 211%. Just on Voice America alone last month, we added another 50,000 new listeners. So we're tracking to do about 2.2 million listeners this year on the show. 140 countries we go out to now, 72 live. So that's huge news for us. So thank you. If you're listening right now to the show, thank you very much for your support. That is phenomenal to be the number one, not only the number one fintech radio show in the world, but now the number one radio show on Voice America Business. So thank you very much. So Sam.
Yeah, so Ryan, I've got a question for you actually. You've had a very successful career working at JP Morgan, and now you're the founder of Kindred. And I'm wondering, from your experience, and you worked with obviously other successful women executives while you were at JP Morgan, what lessons did you take away from that when you were starting your own company? What considerations are you taking in as the founder, as in you're in the chief position now?
So I think one of the things that you learn, particularly as a founder of a new company, is that you start making a lot of assumptions, and you have to really quickly figure out kind of what of your assumptions are right or wrong. And I think this is interesting in that it forces you to really think a lot about, is have your experiences in life been similar or unique to what your who your customer actually is? And there's nothing like being in the field doing customer interviews to really understand and force you to kind of come to grips to that actually your life may not be what the average person is living through. And I think that, kind of bringing it back to this conversation around diversity, to me, as I start building my team, I think a lot about it's not only different skill sets that I need, but different life experiences that I need at the table. Because the more diverse the team that we build, the more likely we're actually going to build something that's relevant to our customers. And so I have, I would say, the opportunity and the responsibility that when you're starting from scratch, like it's you have that opportunity to build it. You can't blame that you inherited something. But to me, it really comes back to it's all about the customer do you really understand your customer? And there's nothing like having, again, a diverse team to help you to do that.
I think that's I love the idea of how well do you know your customer and how much does your life experience mirror theirs? Because one of my favorite stories that just came out is around Melinda Gates jumping into this whole topic, the focus that she's putting on and women in tech itself, because you have to remember that's her background, right? I mean, her background came out of the tech space. So, I love that type of leadership. And having those, I guess the word role model is where I would go with that.
One of the things that I'm really excited about, we talked a little bit about some of the stats around the funding in the VC market. I think what's really interesting, and it's still early days, but kind of the early data would suggest that women are actually outperforming men when it comes to raising capital online through crowdfunding. So whether it's Kickstarter in the tech world, women are not, putting up as many ideas on Kickstarter for new companies, but they're 2/3 more likely to actually reach their goals. Whereas the male founders, about 30% of them reach whatever their funding goal is. So that's kind of interesting. On Circle Up, which is doing equity investing in consumer companies, women are 5 times more likely to be funded via Circle Up than they are from a VC fund. So what's interesting, there's one thing which is how do you build your company, but what's interesting is as we bring a lot of big data and kind of more hard science to whether it's to how we hire people or how you access capital, a lot of our unconscious biases are actually being taken out of the equation. And so I'm really optimistic that as we start giving all of us more flexibility in how we raise capital and how we hire, that perhaps kind of bringing big data and science will actually help us do a better job in building diverse teams.
So Gela. Yeah, I was going to say.
Actually, let me ask Gela a question, Sam. Gela, you interview a lot of leaders, female leaders in the tech space. What do you think makes, differentiates females as founders? Is there a particular quality that we've just heard that they're able to get crowdfunding more successfully, but what differentiates the great female founders that you've met?
I honestly think Rand kind of hinted or alluded to it, and it's that notion of unconscious bias that we're aware of, but that extends in also to a greater sense of empathy. And when we put ourselves in the end customer's position, we really do try to imagine what are the actual problems that we're trying to fix, and what is that chain of instances that create that problem. And we're not looking at it from a singular perspective. It's not linear. It's very, very systematic. And so we're looking more of a spider web. We want to think about mutations because we actually encounter so many different permutations. And I think we're actually expected to develop a better sense of empathy as we're brought up. It's we're socialized to have it. So when we actually look at solving problems or creating solutions, we're going to take every single possibly instance or problem or challenge that we can conceive of. And then we also extend that into our network and ask for that feedback. I think there's a better feedback loop amongst communities. And I think women have a natural tendency to do that. There's a better empathy muscle that is exercised on a daily basis, and I think that actually creates a better solution. And the fact that we look outwards for support rather than just very linearly makes a big difference. So I think the common denominator amongst most of the female founders that I've had the pleasure of interviewing or speaking with has been that they are empathetic from the get-go. And that is a culture and a principle that they encourage in their teams and as they collect and build their teams. That is something they look for. It is a social skill. It's actually an emotional intelligence. I think that's one of the most critical things that we can bring into an organization as a higher level of emotional intelligence. And that may also be why crowdsourcing is such an easier way of approaching getting funding for women, because they're actually speaking to an entire community that they can empathize with. And in turn, that community recognizes that their needs are being met in a very different way, in a way that actually serves them best. And therefore, funding is more effective in that sense.
You know what I find interesting? We're at a time in history where potentially come November, we could have our first female president. We've got Angela Merkel in Germany. We could see
We better have our first female president in the U.S. That's all I can say.
Listen, you're good.
but you know, I mean, we're still talking about diversity within the leadership positions within technology, and yet in the U.K., the U.S., and Germany, so three superpowers, we've got a woman potentially. I'll say that again. Potentially women leadership across all three. And I'm curious, Tanya, and I hope I said your name correctly.
Tanya.
Yeah. Tanya, there you go. Of course I didn't. See, Brett's not the only one that slaughters name. But I'm curious from your perspective and looking at that. You know, it almost seems to be this yin yang type of position that doesn't line up.
What doesn't line up? The fact that we may have these women in these huge leadership roles, kind of internationally, but not necessarily in our own.
But still struggling.
Still struggling
in tech. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, no,
I think
the most powerful.
I think that's exactly right. That's exactly right, and I think it's because we've gotten better, at least, about having more women in organizations, kind of at a senior level. But it needs to permeate the entire organization, and I think we're seeing role models in the leaders like Hillary Clinton, Angela Merkel, et cetera, but we need more of that type of mentorship and those types of role models within the business sector. And I think some of those initiatives are done by prioritizing diversity. And it can't be force-fed within an organization. I think what we've seen is that some of the most successful initiatives in organizations are those that actually don't tout diversity kind of at the forefront. One example I'll share, what we do at Artivest, is actually cross-training. So we encourage employees to work in a different department for a day, and we utilize this approach with new and existing employees. And the overall goal is help them understand other parts of the firm, help them build skills, and help them understand the business, and help them identify new potential areas of interest. And a byproduct of that cross-training is that it has a positive impact on diversity because it exposes both department heads and employees to a wider variety of people. So I think that's one way you can encourage more women to get exposure to various different parts of the business, and that leads to different types of role models, and hopefully that will allow the senior women to kind of be successful in business as they kind of are in the world already.
You know, Sam, Tanya, I agree with you to a certain extent. I think organic diversity embracing is lovely. I think you can force feed it, and I think you can drag them along kicking and screaming. And frankly, we understand that in big organizations, you have to lead from the top. I mean, there are grassroots that we can do on the lower levels, there are grassroots efforts we can have in middle management. But for the most part, it has to be spearheaded by the executive leadership. And I think you can drag an organization along kicking and screaming into the real world, which is made up of half and half. And that there are multiple types of experiences, be it social class, be it education, be it background, be it opportunity, be it race, religion, orientation, it doesn't matter. I think we actually can superimpose some of those changes, and people will adapt to them. Part of it is having cross-training. I agree that people get to experience other aspects of different departments, but there's also something called unconscious bias training. There are ways that we can open up our minds, that we can actually force a team to experiment and to work differently together and to actually let everyone have a voice at the table. I don't think we have to embrace this organic, lovely, natural rising up of diversity. I think we can cram it down people's throats and they're actually going to swallow it.
Or we could do both.
I absolutely agree with that. And by the way, you guys, you forgot to mention the British Prime Minister, Theresa May, is another female world leader. And something that we found that really is working here over in the UK is a mandatory requirement coming down the pipeline, not very far away, to have to report the gender pay gap in every company. So think about it. You have a company, you are trying to attract the best and brightest from your business school, and you are publishing a 30% gender pay gap. Now, first boards look at it and they say, oh, goodness, you know, I think we do pay equally for equal work. The problem is that we've got women in the low-paying roles and we've got men in the high-paying roles, and they can say, this isn't our fault, right? And boards need to fight back and say, well, who do you think is accountable for career progression in our own company? It's us. It's the board. So I think transparency plays a huge role, not as a quota. It's not interfering in telling you who to put where, but it's saying, guys, you're going to have to publish this data. And that in itself is the biggest nudge that I have seen for us to do the right thing.
Yeah, Julie, you're absolutely right. And I can tell you when that data gets published, it is going to be abhorrent, the differences, because I think what people aren't appreciating, to Tanya's point, there are more and more women in financial services firms now, but because they often tend to go into roles of human resources, marketing, compliance, risk management, legal, you know, things that I would imagine are pretty important elements of creating, selling, and managing financial services products, but they are not valued inside the institution. They are absolutely not valued by the C-suite, and they're not valued by the boards. And when these stats come out, I think that's going to be one of the biggest glaring issues, is that until a firm can appreciate and value some of the social skills and the emotional intelligence that Gayla mentioned as part of how we do business, there won't be a change. And I think it's going to be a huge conversation.
What makes me laugh is that you have to be compliant in order to actually get a license. That's critical. Otherwise, you don't exist. It's a priori requirement. You have to follow legal. And if you're going to sell, you have to be in marketing. If you're going to staff the bloody organization, those things are actually essential in creating the organization itself. They are fundamental architecture to the existence of it. And we don't value that. Instead, we value those that are the P&L and revenues. You don't have revenues unless you have that compliance and the legal structure.
That's so absolutely right. And from an investor's perspective, we absolutely look at that. You know, to Ian's point, you're putting a team together person by person. And if you don't figure out that you need a diversity of skill sets as much as you need a diversity of population, you're not going to succeed. And these businesses, that the more diversity that they bring in their C-suite, but also in their skill set.
Can I jump in with a question here? And I don't know, maybe I direct it to Amy first. You know, Amy, as a founder of a startup myself, you know, what should I be doing to ensure that I'm encouraging diversity and bringing in the right skills?
Well, we look at it two ways, and I think the first is this sort of area of organic growth, right? So starting with the founder, am I asking myself the tough questions? Do I have the people in the room that represent the clients, the business, the products that I'm selling, the audience that I'm selling to? And if I don't, then I need to work a lot harder to do that. I need to ask the question of my recruiters. I need to ask the question of my senior staff, and I need to ask the question of my network, because they're out there and doing it. You know, it can be tough and it can be challenging, particularly if you've already started down the path and haven't quite focused on this initiative, but it's not too late. I think as investors, we have to ask the question of our founders. It's great that we find a wonderful idea that's going to revolutionize services, but we need to ask early on, because those early hires or early founding relationships will set the culture for the entire company and therefore the industry. Secondly, it's about, you know, finding ways to continue both men and women to put their money where their mouth is in terms of networking and mentoring. You know, we talk all the time about leaning in, which is incredibly important, but then there's also this issue of leaning back. And not everybody is as comfortable moving forward and leaning in as the next person. So lean back. And I think it was Madeleine Albright. This is one of my favorite quotes. There's a special place in hell for women that don't help other women. And that is generationally something that I think has changed tremendously in my lifetime. And I'm so excited about.
I sat next to her on a flight. She is a phenomenal person. Well, Madeleine Albright. She blew me away.
Maybe picking up on what Amy said, I think not all is gloomy. I would say, as someone who is just starting their own firm today, I feel like in addition to kind of the traditional networking, there are a lot of kind of new opportunities to help me start my business. And so part of that comes from kind of the freelance or the gig economy through companies like Second Shift or Power to Fly, where you're able to access amazing women who may want more flexibility at this moment in time, but they may want to actually come and work for you full time after they give you a test run, frankly. And what better way to kind of show that you're a great company to work with than someone who's freelancing actually has that opportunity to test drive and comes in. Those groups of women, I think, coming out of Second Shift and Power to Fly, not only are they bringing diversity from a sex perspective, but also what you're seeing, I think, which is important for the tech industry, is actually an ability to break out of the age zone. So all of a sudden, you're bringing a different set of experience to the table. And I think that for example, for the company that I'm building today, like, I need to understand both digital media and print media. And so someone who just knows Snapchat is from a kind of a digital marketing perspective is just not going to work for me. And so I need the best of both. And so having flexibility as far as who I hire is interesting. I think as you get bigger, there are companies like Pymetrics that was founded by Harvard and MIT neuroscientists that are, again, bringing big data and science to hiring. And again, it's making sure that they help all of us kind of get rid of, again, of these unconscious biases. I was talking with the guys at Pymetrics the other day, and they were telling me that one of the banks they work with, typically their kind of entry level, I think it was probably investment banking candidate pool, was typically 75% men, 25% women. Now that they've started using Pymetrics, they've been able to actually equalize out 50-50 the applicant pool. That's pretty amazing. And so I think I'm excited that actually technology itself can be pretty helpful. But again, it's differences in experiences, and it's not just about our sex. It's about the different kind of cultural backgrounds that we had, the different ages that we are, that give us kind of different life experiences. And unless you say to me your target market is a 25-year-old white guy from the East Coast, like, you probably need to think about kind of how you're putting your team together.
So Gela, gonna jump
Gela,
in. Yeah.
I have a quick question for you. Mm-hmm. So you know, I've got 4 kids, 3 daughters. Mm-hmm. All getting ready to enter the workforce. Mm-hmm. What would be your message to them? What would be your encouragement to them? Are we actually is it going to get better? What should they look to do?
First and foremost, I say extend your associations beyond what you're comfortable with. Go meet and talk to people that are completely different from you. You're going to benefit from the diversity of experience, like Brianne said. That if you open up your mind, take a step back, be open to listening, to learning, to being curious, and create relationships that extend beyond what you're interested in. For financial services, I think it's really important for all of us to actually look beyond it, to insurance, to looking to healthcare, to chemistry, to biology. All of that is interesting because it feeds in. Eventually, it's going to touch our industry, i.e. biometrics, for example. But be open, be curious, talk to as many people as you possibly can. You're always going to be learning, and take that opportunity to learn something from every person you encounter. When it comes down to career, the best thing you can have is a good network. That is the only way you're going to succeed. You need people behind you that support you. You need people in front of you that are open the door. And the more doors that you have open and the more people behind you pushing you forward, the better chances you have of doing something fascinating, interesting, and making a contribution yourself. One thing I want to tack on at the very end. Diversity is absolutely key to having debate, dissent, and discussion. And those things are critical in arriving at the right conclusion or workable solution. And if we don't have that, we have absolutely nothing. It's not cookie cutter. Don't live cookie cutter lives. It's not a cookie cutter industry. So we are at a disadvantage when we ignore the benefits of diversity. And that is what I...
Absolutely.
End of story. And I also want to give one more shout out.
Hurry up, quick.
Yeah, I'm doing it. Amy, the Anthemis Foundation just launched their 2017 fellowship cohort. And I have to say, I am so incredibly thrilled that two of the FemTech leaders are two of them are part of the 5 of the cohort that were awarded, Diana Biggs and Andres Donea. and
fantastic.
So I want to
So Gayla, we've got about 25 seconds left, I'm afraid, before we go off the air. So I just want to give a quick shout out to Amy, Tanya, Julie, and Rian and Gayla for joining us and talking about diversity today. Guys, we'll tweet out your links to your companies and your Twitter IDs and so forth. But thank you for joining us. And just remember, if you aren't already, please follow the show on Twitter. We're at BreakingBanks1. You can also follow Sam Maul at Sam Maul and at Brett King for myself. And if you like the show, don't forget to go to iTunes and give us a great review. And this week, we kick off FinTech 5 with Sam Maul's own podcast. So thanks very much, guys. See you next week.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time for more of the latest in fintech news.